Joining us now is a very good friend of the program, the sports professor Rick Haro, as it's time for our golf business and law segment, sponsored by the law firm of McDonald Hopkins in West Palm Beach. And I am, of course, not a lawyer, just a non-lawyer spokesperson for the law firm of McDonald Hopkins. Rick, you tend to give yourself 5 and 6 footers. I have a feeling you'd be giving yourself even longer putts if you were playing out there in that wind at Royal Birkdale.
How about the oscillation rule? Do you think we'd call that on each other? If we did, we probably wouldn't play with each other ever again. You know, it depends on what the money is. But I know at the county amateur they would do it. By the way, Rooney, are you there?
Rooney is not here.
He's taking
this segment off. We'll hear from him later on in the show. But he's boycotting your segment.
He's taking the segment off. I know exactly why. Because I look on page 9B of the sports, right? And you see some pretty significant names on one column. Norman, Harrington, Choi, Wakefield, Curtis. Then look at the next column. You see Rooney's name there.
Pat Rooney Jr. playing very well in the county amateur. We already covered it in the opening segment.
But, all right, never mind. Then I don't want to do it again.
It's okay. We'll give Pat some props. I mean, he backed up a little bit yesterday with a 77, but he had a phenomenal one under par round of 71 on Friday. He's at 148 after two rounds, tied for 36th with guys like Owen O'Connell, who's a former Walker Cup player, so he's in good company. But he is 13 shots back of Gary Nicklaus, who is setting the pace going into today's final round.
I'm going to text him and have him make sure he doesn't focus on that little jab putting stroke that he's got. So we'll try to figure that out. So he's taking the segment off, huh?
Yeah, he's boycotting your segment, Rick. He's getting ready for his amateur. He needs to get into focus. So he figured, I can't stand the frustration talking to Haro today. Let me sit this one out. I'll come back in the second hour of the show. And then after the show, of course, he'll be on his way to go play up at Lost Tree Club. So you got me today, buddy. It's just me and you, Rick.
Well, this is going to be good, but just also tell him before he tees off, A, good luck, and B, I clearly won't have noticed that he's gone.
Well, they're really not noticing another absence over the pond at Royal Birkdale, and that being Tiger Woods. They were at the beginning of the week. I mean, all the talk going into this British Open was Tiger's not here. There'll be an asterisk next to the name of whoever wins this week. And then all of a sudden, Greg Norman does what he's done. He's on his honeymoon. He just got married to Chris Evert a couple weeks ago. He shoots even par rounds of 70 on Thursday and Friday, follows that up yesterday with a 72, which was just two strokes over what the best round of the day was in 50-mile-per-hour winds. So at the age of 53, he's leading the British Open going into the final round. He is 18 holes away from becoming, by 5 years, the oldest man ever to win a major. And Rick, with Tiger Woods not being here, this is perhaps the best thing that could have happened to the British Open.
Well, yeah, and let me give you another perspective, because I'm lucky enough to have known Greg for a while, and I've been on the board of a company that he actually co-invested in and co-founded, called GPS Industries, headquartered in Vancouver, but the distance devices that is now basically taking over the world, and he and I have had a business relationship for a while. And I will tell you that most of the time that I've spent with Greg the last couple of years, you'd see him come in with a yellow pad and take copious notes as a businessman, and he's great in a boardroom. We all understand that. But if you were to tell me that within 6 months of the last business meeting we had, that he'd be leading the British Open by two strokes, as you know, you'd hear how he played, maybe every couple of weekends, maybe not, didn't really matter, go out and putt, it would be crazy. It's unbelievable. And now everybody's talking about that. I don't know how he feels personally about this, but you just see on the practice tee on ABC that Doug Sanders, who I guess there's no other way to put it, right? He blew the open against Nicklaus by missing 1970 by missing a foot and a half putt. He came over and put his arm around him and then started crying. So I'm sure Greg is saying, yeah, thanks. I appreciate you remembering, you know, what you did. So just leave me alone for a while. So I'm sure there are a lot of guys who are meaning well, who are trying to struggle as to what to say to Greg other than just play your game. But the more people that say play your game, the more you start thinking about that stuff.
Well, his game, I mean, the track record is not sterling. He has won two of these things before. It's his only two major championships of his career, 86 at Turnberry, 93 at Royal St. George's. But we remember, you know, in 86, that was his only victory in the majors when he had the 54-hole lead in all four. Jack Nicklaus ran him down at the Masters. Raymond Floyd was able to overtake him at the U.S. Open. And then, of course, remember Bob Tway, the miracle bunker shot at the PGA Championship. So having this Saturday slam in 86, the British at Turnberry was the only one that he ended up closing. He's come in second 8 times in majors. You know, Greg Norman, unfortunately, Rick, his legacy might be disappointment and heartache in major championships.
Well, his legacy might be that, but his legacy would be the oldest golfer ever to win a major as a casual golfer who's not really that interested in golf but generating a billion-dollar business, which is a hell of a legacy. There's no pressure on him today, I would think, but who knows? Everybody that says they know how a golfer or an athlete thinks before a round is full of it. But it would be the most amazing transformation of an image in a 3 or 4 hour period of anything. And by the way, for those of us in Palm Beach County in the state of Florida, it's a pretty good payday too, because you know his offices are up in Jupiter and his residence is now between Jupiter Island and now Boca Raton with Chris. And nobody's talked about the impact on his business. His business runs whether he plays well or not. That's the beauty of Greg Norman's business, the wines, the golf design, the golf courses, the management company, the promotion, the retail lines. All of that, based on the Shark logo, is a tremendous vertically integrated business, is what they call it. But let me tell you something. If he plays well and wins, that takes off even more, too.
Good point. The sports professor, Rick Haro, joining us as he does each and every week here. The Golf Business and Law segment, sponsored by the law firm of McDonald Hopkins in West Palm Beach. And I am not a lawyer, just a non-lawyer spokesperson for the law firm of McDonald Hopkins. Russ Evans with you. Golf Exchange, presented by the Honda Classic on ESPN Radio 760. Rick, great point. You know, that is what he's been doing primarily over the last decade, is running Great White Shark Enterprises and making the wine and the clothing and the golf course design. And for two reasons: A, he wanted to get that business running and you know, hopping on all cylinders, and B, he was physically hurt. I mean, for the last few years, he had had real problems with the back. Even though he's 53, it seems the last 6, 7, 8 years that Greg Norman, as he gets older, it seems like he's younger because he's healthier. The body is feeling a lot better than it was. And you add to that the fact that he's now happy. He's out of one marriage and into another with Chris Evert, and the entire divorce proceedings are over. The $100 million settlement is now in the rearview mirror, so doesn't have to worry about that. It almost seems like Greg Norman, for the first time in a long time, is in a good spot in his life.
Well, and C, he enjoys business. He enjoys doing it. He enjoys talking about it. He enjoys writing about it. And that's the interesting thing about this, is that it's an amazing situation when you have something in your life that you do because you want to and not because you have to. You know, the purse at the British Open is about $8.2 million. And first prize is about $1.48, $1.5 million. And with the exchange rate, it's, you know, a billion. Who knows how much it is? But the bottom line is Greg Norman does not need that $1.5 million.
Greg should make sure he gets paid in euros, because then it's worth like $3 million or $3.5 million.
Thank you very much. And by the way, another interesting story about this very quickly is that for another feature I was doing, you know, the Brits bet on anything, as you know, and it's a $4 trillion worldwide gambling business. They bet $48 million on the British Open industry last year, and this year they expect it to be $60 million. Why? Because with Tiger out of it, more chance to win. So Ernie started at 9-1. Sergio was the odds-on favorite at the beginning at 8-1. And if anybody – and by the way, Tiger had been 13-8 before, you know, his knee. Now, if anybody knows what Norman's odds were, you need to let me know before I do my other stuff this morning. But I tried to find his odds in everywhere on the site. He's not even listed.
Well, I heard last night on Golf Central, Rich Lerner and Steve Sands were saying before the tournament he was 1,000-1. He was 1,000-1 before the tournament, and now going into today's final round, I believe he's 4-1, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, and it may even be more. You know, you have a better chance of getting hit by lightning, but that was the perception of this as an afterthought, and what a great story. Remember, we've been saying the last couple of weeks, now it's obvious, but we're out ahead of the trend, that we needed a compelling story. Way to go, Phil.
What's
Phil, 13 over?
Yeah, he's 13 over. Ernie Els is 13 over. Sergio Garcia is +9, along with guys like Robert Allenby and Retief Goosen and Jim Furyk. And you know, some of the players that we thought were going to step up didn't even make the weekend, like Stuart Sink and Aaron Baddeley and Charles Howe III and Jeff Ogilvy and Vijay Singh and Boo Weekly. I mean, those guys aren't even here this weekend. While guys like Tom Watson at the age of 58 just missed the cut on the number, it's been a very odd British Open. I mean, who saw this coming? But we said the same thing about Rocco Mediate at the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines a couple of months ago, and Rocco, again, to his credit, is playing very well this weekend. Rick, in regards to Greg Norman, we know that he's a huge name, not only in the world of golf, but in the world of sports, and what he's become, the cottage industry that Greg Norman has branded himself as, with the Great White Shark and the logo and all that stuff. Where does he rank among the pantheon of names in this sport that have marketed their name and made a lot of money and become a business, i.e. Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods. Where is Greg Norman in that on that list?
Well, he's in the top four, and it depends on apples to oranges because, you know, Arnold Palmer still makes a lot on his brand. Clearly, IMG works with him, and the issue with him is he's morphed into a legend. Most of the people that buy his stuff, it's the older demographic. The younger demographic will buy it because they know he's a legend but never really saw him won or play, and so that's an interesting one. Jack, frankly, made a lot of money but also lost a lot of money, and he has the Golden Bear brand, which is probably more recognizable, and I'm not nobody's banker, so I'm just guessing. And Tiger is probably up there in number three or number two position, 2-1, somewhere up there, because you know he's clearly number one in the future, and he's had 10 years to amass, but not 30 or 40 years, so he'll be there. He'll be number one no matter what. 10 years from now, you ask that question, he's clearly number one. Now, Greg is in the top four, which is amazing considering he's only won two majors. And while he was on the top of the leaderboard in money winnings and rankings for X number of straight weeks over a two-year period, his brand is tremendous, but he's only won two majors only. And for him to be up there in the top four of all-time golf brands is tremendous. And it's a testament not to his golf, but to his business.
Sports professor Rick Harrell joining us here, as he does each and every week during the Golf Business and Law segment, sponsored by the law firm of McDonald Hopkins in West Palm Beach. And I am not a lawyer, just a non-lawyer spokesperson for the law firm of McDonald Hopkins. Russ Evans with you. Golf Exchange presented by the Honda Classic on ESPN Radio 760. Rick, we spoke last week about TV ratings generally year in, year out for the British Open, not as high as the U.S. Open, specifically this year, being that the U.S. Open was in prime time, so had a chance to get into the double-digit in rarefied air because it was on at 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. British Open started at 8 o'clock this morning. You know, it's on from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. on ABC, so it's tough to get big-time ratings because of that. Where will the British Open ratings this year, because of what Greg Norman is doing, likely be? And then attendance-wise, you know, they say that they expect about 60,000 people at Birkdale today, despite the bad weather, and that for the week they'll draw over 200,000. I mean, the British fans are rabid about their golf.
Yeah, and I remember from St. Andrews last year and a few other Opens that I've attended that they don't cut off ticket sales like quote-unquote American majors do, especially the Masters. And so the numbers are almost inflated because you can get a ticket at the last minute. I know that's difficult for people who walk up and do it, but that's what they end up doing. And transportation is very difficult. Everybody takes the train. It is closer to London this year, clearly being on the English side as opposed to Scotland in the Rota, as they call it. Ratings are going to be much better. That's a no-brainer. How much better? Nobody knows, because the ratings for the British are basically 30 or 40% lower than the U.S. Open, much lower this year because of the prime time feature of the U.S. Open, and a bit lower than the Masters, which is always very high and always sustaining. And the PGA tournament is always, the PGA championship is always the last rating. It's the last of the year. You want to see Tiger at the end, and we don't have him this year. So, you know, the bottom line of all of that is unless someone has already won three, which hasn't happened, then it's, well, wait till next year almost. So this year is going to be maybe number one, maybe number 1A, basically because of the power of Greg Norman.
Rick, before I let you go, kind of switching gears here, and it's a storyline that we've been following for a number of months on Golf Exchange with you in regards to golf and the Olympics, you know, turning our attention 8 years from now to 2016, and there's some more news. You know, this story obviously has legs, and it will continue to have legs until October of next year when the IOC will decide, but golf's major governing body stepped up their campaign to get the sport added to the Olympic program, and they named former LPGA Commissioner Ty Votaw as the lead on the effort. Now, this news came down just a couple of days ago. Votaw, who is now Executive Vice President for the PGA Tour, will be loaned out between now and October 2009. So for the next 15 months, he will leave his spot as Executive VP on the PGA Tour and become basically the liaison for all these different committees working with the IOC trying to get golf in, and he's representing the American and the European Tours, the Royal and Ancient Club, the LPGA, the USGA, the PGA of America, and Augusta National Golf Club. So he's representing all these. It's almost like that eight-headed monster, and the IOC will decide in October 2009 on the possible changes to the Olympic program. The possible host cities for the 2016 Games are Chicago, Tokyo, Rio de Janeiro, and Madrid. So it's down to four. Golf has not been an Olympic sport since 1904. Rick, every time we talk about this story, it seems more and more like this is going in a positive direction for golf.
Well, it is. It's linked somewhat with the venue for 2016. Rio is the only site that might be golf challenged, but you know, you think of Brazil and South America golf, and they would use this as a stepping stone to increase golf. Of course, you know, Spain, of course, Japan, of course, and here, Medina, wherever, it would be a classic. That's a no-brainer. But you don't let the sport back into the Olympics based on where a particular Olympics is going to be. I know Ty very well. He has varied background. He's a lawyer. He was Charlie Meacham's number two before Charlie became the LPGA commissioner. Then he was the LPGA commissioner, and then he was the international guy for the PGA Tour. So he is very well qualified. He's also a good statesman as well. Now, here's the other piece of this, by the way. It's not easy to get consensus for the Olympics, and there are some Far Eastern countries that want to make sure that their sports, many of whom we don't even know, Tekwara, there are two or three other sports we can't even pronounce, by the way, that I've seen when I was over in Thailand, that are trying very hard to get in. And guess what? There are 31 sports that are petitioning or are involved, including ballroom dancing, life-saving skills, bridge.
Life-saving skills?
Yes.
What,
they
like
quantify
CPR?
Yes.
That's ridiculous.
That's not going to be an Olympic sport. There are organizations that want it to be, is
my
point.
I should hope that that doesn't beat out golf in 2016. We'll be watching some, you know, medic performing CPR on a dummy instead of watching Tiger and Phil trying to win a gold medal.
Ballroom dancing, because of Dancing with the Stars, there are 90 federations.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
All right, one more quickie. By the way, do you know, realize that until 1920, tug of war was an Olympic sport? Honest to God. And there is a federation of the International Tug of War Group that is petitioning the Olympics, and that's who we're competing against.
Well, now, I got my fingers crossed for golf.
Yeah, I got it. I continue with this. By the way, we will continue with this between now and October of 2009, I can guarantee you.
Yep. He is the sports professor, Rick Haro, as he does each and every week, bringing it strong here on Golf Exchange, presented by the Honda Classic, the golf business and law segment, sponsored by the law firm of McDonald Hopkins in West Palm Beach, of which I am not a lawyer, just a non-lawyer spokesperson for those fine people. Rick, thank you, as always. Have a great Sunday. I will see you Thursday.
Yeah.
We will finally try to tee it up and get that round in at Admiral's Cove.
Bring your A game. See you guys.
All right. There he is, Rick Haro, joining us as he does each and every week here on Golf Exchange, presented by the Honda Classic.